Under the class concept that I use in Chicago workshop, and one fellow had the nerve to raise his hand and tell me, what do you mean by so and so and so? That doesn't make sense.
The whole method doesn't.
Now, I've spent 2 or 3 years developing a program to compute APB in class and establish class clusters and to present to these people. And I've done so many hundreds of races, and I know what it'll do. I've got statistics to prove this. And there's someone who's trying to learn it from me, or I'm assuming they're trying to learn it because it's a workshop, tells me that it doesn't make sense. I would appreciate it more if they said, I don't understand it, could you explain it more thoroughly to me? That would be the intelligent way to approach that.
Well, that's what he meant.
But you know, like Jimmy spends a lot of time programming, and he puts a lot of hours into a lot of energy, and to come up to him and tell him, well, Jimmy, this program doesn't make any sense.
He better be armed.
It's rather insulting, believe me. So like I said, keep an open mind, and you know, some things may appeal to you, some may not, but all of the tools in the methodology are used in concert. We don't want to take one tool and try to use it as a machine gun to mow down winners. You can't use ABV in class exclusive of NGN or anything else. You use it as a complete kit. But one thing won't, you know, become obvious to you using a certain tool, then maybe some other tool will make it obvious. So we'll talk some more about APB in class tomorrow. If you don't have any more questions, I'll pass it on.
Yeah, he's going to go into this detail with race, his choosing, and things that he's brought to help us with. Haven't you?
Yeah.
Good, I got you.
Western Reserve is emotionless when we go back east. Back east, they give us drums, cheers, and big applause, laugh. Midwest is very sane, that's good. But I'm going to tell you, don't get so sane. The one thing he said there, you'll find it, you say we all fight each other. What he said, and Dick Schmidt will tell you, just do what you like to do. Do what works best for you. I say that absolutely 100% wrong. You do exactly as I tell you. If you don't, you're out. Right? Look, that's not supposed to make sense to you. It really isn't. And just if you just take that which makes sense to you, and I like that, I think I'll use that, and you don't take it all, you're destined to be a loser by this method. You might luck out, but you've got to do it the way I prescribed it. And then tell me, then tell me, you know, after you're a winner, and they say, I don't need you anymore, you old man. But until you're a winner, you better darn well do what we tell you, what I tell you, because you're going to get a lot of difference. How many of you are using Synergism? How many of you are, if you didn't know there was something else out there, would be very happy with Synergism? Remember, Bob's here. Anybody?
Well, I could go hard.
Okay, there's some people who use Synergism, they were very happy. It's like, you know, the guy didn't have any feet. The guy just didn't have any legs and shoes, whatever it was. Shoes and feet, legs. And you see somebody with shoes, and he's not freezing, you say, well, I'm going to buy those shoes. But before that, you were pretty happy.
Sorry.
So tomorrow morning, I'm going to swear off the time because I'm so tired.
I'm not tired.
You're tired.
No, I'm not.
Tomorrow, one of the first things you people in Synergism will have a lot of questions about specifics of Synergism. There are 22 of you, as I understand it, are using Synergism. And we're not going to say to you, hey, you've got to go into the next step. That's entirely up to you. The only thing I don't leave up to you is whether you should have the following or not. That I insist that you get it, if you want to really go with us. But hey, for the Synergism guy that's winning 70%, isn't that just as good as winning 70% with energy? Sure it is. So don't jump to the next program unless the one you've got doesn't have enough whistles and bells to get you up where you belong. The next step in handicapping, after we determine to classify the horses, is to further eliminate non-contenders and to use the best aspects of historical mainstream handicap that there are. There are some very valid points in mainstream handicap. They're usually obscured by the fact that the person who gives you the viable points also gives you a bunch of nonsense. Well, this next speaker has sorted out the nonsense from the viable in handicapping terminology you can understand. And that's Tom Brown.
That's a total surprise. I had no idea it was on there.
It's an old assumption.
On my time.
On Bob's time. I'm going to have to phrase this in my mind here before I get started. First of all, how many people will be in the velocity session tomorrow? Give me a show of hands, would you please? Maybe we'll just go to the races and win a lot of money while you wait and folks are talking about it.
There are 22 solid people.
All right.
When two or three are gathered together in your name, you must report. To the Bible.
Very quick, I'm just trying to put this into some sense here. We did a class in Beaumont just recently, the weekend of May 6th. And then again about the 20th, the weekend of June 3rd, we started off by, we started off in a couple of ways. We started off with current profiles, and then we went to a contender selection process. And I've probably gotten 24 letters back from that class, people saying that it helped their handicapping, and if not their winning percentage, it certainly helped up the time that it took them to handicap races. So I guess that's what I'm going to offer to you now that I'm up here with the microphone in front of me.
Were they form letters?
They were form letters, yeah. My mother sent a lot of them. I can tell she sent some of them. And there were a lot of them to open when I came back. I was on my way for 5 weeks of fly fishing up in the Mammoth area when that class ended. And when I came back, there was a lot of mail, and I was very gratified to get there.
You need to stall any longer. Tell about your deprived childhood.
I'm going to tell you about my deprived child, depraved childhood. I'll tell you about Bob Purdy now. He said something about deviations from norm, and I thought, sure, originally, and tonight you were going to talk about Bob being our resident deviant. Essentially, what we did in that class was to set some guidelines, and if you have a pencil and paper, we'll go through it right now, because they're certainly not written down in any of these books, I don't believe.
Oh, gee, Tom, we wouldn't try to write your stuff in.
First of all, I would...
But we thought you had a copyright on it. By Tom's book.
Let me suggest something to all of you. By my book, you're right. Now, that'll be available in December, probably. The official publication date is January, but it'll hit the bookstore sometime in September or in December. But what I'm going to recommend to you, I just heard a tape the other day. As you know, a number of us here were involved with Expo 90. And by having been involved in it, I got a call from Greg Lawler, the fellow that has evidently made a lot of money from that Expo this year, unlike Quinn and Quirin in the past, who were not businessmen. But anyway, he called me and suggested or offered to me a number of the tapes, anything I wanted. So I did take a few, and then after I had selected some, he said, well, what about my tape? I said, well, I didn't know he did one. And he said, yeah, I did want to turn your hand together. I said, all right, great, send me your tape, I'll hear it. But one of the tapes that I took was the tape that was recorded by Joe Finley, who is William Scott. And it's excellent. It is on current form, current condition, and it lends itself to the contender selection process, and it's very good. And I know they're not terribly expensive, and I know that most of you have received the brochure from Expo 90, because you're all on somebody's mailing list, and I think Greg's got everybody. And it's very, very well done. What he's done is he has shortened the material from how we first run today, which was very good. We shortened that into a little more workable format, and It's just more usable, especially with an R-frame reference. So I recommend that highly to you. And basically what this class that I developed as contender guidelines, first of all, is that we use the up-close concept that you'll find in How Will Your Horse Run Today and in this book. And we accepted any horse as a contender that was up close at the stretch call of its last race. Now that's up through 30 days. Anything over 30 days, we spend a lot of time with the workouts. And this is no place to go into that, but if you're going to go over 30 days, label it as a layoff horse and worry about the workout. But anything up to 30 days, the horse was close up, and by close up, in a sprint, the horse was within 3 lengths of the stretch call, and in a route, it was within 4.5 lengths of the stretch call. Now, I know Joe distinguishes between 6, 6.5, and 7, but you don't have to do that. 3 lengths and 4.5 lengths. And if the horse was there at the stretch call in this last race, the horse is a contender for it, if it's in class. Now, if the horse is dropping in class, just roll that back to the second call position. If the horse was up close and meeting those guidelines at the second call, accept it as a contender. Except any horse that was claimed in its last race as a contender. And except any horse that showed early speed in its last race and is dropping in class.
That's a dynamite one.
It's terrific. Especially if a horse is coming back. Now, a filly makes a case for 7 days, which you can't argue with the case, but that might be a little restrictive. I would prefer to go out to 10 or 11 days on that, as far as being a very powerful factor. But if the horse is coming back right away, showed early speed in its last race and is dropping in class, accept that. Now, apply those to the races that you've been running lately and see if maybe just that simple look at those races doesn't speed up the process and eliminate a lot of horses. Stretch call position is terribly important. And if the horse wasn't up close in its last race, generally speaking, even if there's trouble involved, those horses don't run well next step. So spend a little time with that.
Did I cover all of that?
Well, you're gonna do it tomorrow anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Your designation is hell about better than what they've all read. It really works, even for me.
Yeah, well, Howard spent a lot of time with that. But one of the things that we did in that class was to define class problems. And I would suggest this to you. In fact, I'll get warmed up on this in a moment. Now that we get this going, I'm kind of a nut about this horses dropping in class because it's a two-edged sword. First of all, in the neighborhood of 60%, 55 to 60% of the races are won by horses dropping in class. And you can't get away from that. That just happens that way. Unfortunately, horses that shouldn't be dropped in class are horses that are losing the other 33% of these. Now, I suggest to you that as you handicap a race, that one of the first things you do with that race is analyze the class movement here. And then if the horse is dropping in class, ask yourself, is this a positive drop or is this a negative drop? Let's spend just a moment with a positive drop. Now, a positive drop in class is a horse that can't quite compete at the level you're looking at. In other words, if the horse is being beaten at $16,000, the horse ought to be dropped to 12.5 or to 10, shouldn't it? I mean, you just don't bat your head against the wall forever. So the horse should be dropped. On the other hand, if the horse is threatening to win by being a length or two back at the wire, a neck back at the stretch call before fading a little bit, that's a horse that's threatening to win with just a few feet to go to the wire, right? That kind of horse you don't want to see dropped. Horses that are running second, earning major shares of purses, really shouldn't be dropped. Now, there's some exceptions to that, because as you get to the very end of a meeting, for example, you'll find a lot of horses that have a certain preference for the racetrack that they're on right now might be dropped just to get out of the race out of them. And at the end of the year, you'll see three-year-olds dropped off of good races. But horses should not be dropped off of very good races. They should be dropped off of races that indicate they need to drop. And I would spend a lot of time with that. With every horse that's dropping, try to analyze it. Is this a positive drop, and is it a negative drop? And if it's don't let a two-level drop scare you all that much. Because if a horse is beaten seven or eight lengths, for example, it needs more than just a single-level drop. Chances are it'll need a two-level drop. So don't let that scare you away. Don't look at it and say, well, this is really a suspicious drop because the horse is dropping two levels. If the horse is running badly, it ought to be dropped two levels. It's the horses that are running well that are threatening to win that should not be dropped. And essentially, that was what we did in that class the first week. By the time the final weekend, we did, on Sunday, we did four races, I think, and we swept the car. And every one of them, on that day, three out of five, I think, the day before, and every one we did the previous week, all contenders, all winners conform to those guidelines. And then the feedback's been very good on that as far as people adapting that to their handicapping. It's sped the process up, and surprisingly, you know, maybe not surprisingly, it eliminates a lot of horses that you really shouldn't be looking at anyway. But I recommend the Finley tape. The William Scott is the way it's listed. The William Scott tape from the Expo.
Does he still focus in on stretch loss and then compares the last two races? Before, you know, it's position with respect to the winner of his last two races.
Yeah, he still focuses in on stretch loss, but now he's more flexible in terms of what you can accept. In other words, we have a lot of horses, especially this man, that lost strength last time out. Can't get away from that. A lot of horses win. He's more flexible on that, but the one where he has deviated from his original material is that he's dropped that improvement thing. It's just too hard to gauge, for example. And unless you have accurate figures, overall figures, you can't gauge whether the horse is improving or not, I mean, unless it's really obvious on the form. So he's dropped that. He's condensed it to just three factors, and one of them is recency, which is still important. Recency meaning races and workout activity. The up close at the stretch call. And then finally, his third factor now is stretch loss. But it's very good material, and I recommend it highly. Just don't go overboard on it, because I know when the How Will Your Horse Run Today, when that came out, we had people with all of these large mosaics that they were working from, and then they were trying to take all of that and then move it into our feet per second methodology. So they had two completely separate things going at one time. They were losing a lot of winners, and people that were doing well originally were going downhill. And maybe they understood form a little bit better, but all of a sudden they started getting a lot of losers, so it didn't do a hell of a lot of good.
What was the second guideline you listed?
What was the second guideline I listed? What order was it?
The first one was accepting a contender that was close up to stretch call at running back within 30 gates. And the third one I had was any horse that was climbing. The fourth, any horse with
early. Right, the one in the middle is any horse dropping in class. You just insist on it being close up at the second call instead of the stretch call. Give them a little leeway there. And those are pretty flexible guidelines, but that's the way I use them. It just becomes automatic after a while. And you find that they're very powerful also.
The race that Bob just did, for instance, except in one race, in three straight races, Manifest Destiny was within the guidelines at the stretch call. The last race it was not, so you'd want to go for where it usually is, as opposed to drawing a strict line on the last one.
Well, see, and that comes to because he was a layoff. See, I happen to bet Manifest Destiny out of this race.
I know you did.
But he was a layoff horse in this case. He was out over 30 days. He'd been claimed. They had him running back after the claim, then they ran him back at the same price and claimed him out. So you know immediately, just looking at this, that he was out over 30 days. I don't recall exactly because the date of this race isn't on here. But he would have been considered a layoff horse. You pay attention to his workouts. If you look at his workouts, you see a six furlong and a seven furlong workout. He had some good workouts. Plus, Warren Studi happens to be just an outstanding Southern California trainer. He's very good. But when you get out over 30 days, you treat them a little differently. Don't make that last, especially if a horse been out like 40 days or so, don't make that stretch call an overriding concern here, because if the horse wasn't up close in its last race and it's had some time off, and you know the trainer isn't just somebody you throw away, well then the horse probably needed that, and you accept the minor layoff then, or a freshening period, as a plus for the horse, more than a negative. If the horse is really running good and all of a sudden it's gone for 40 days, that's a whole different ballgame, because that horse probably, or at least on paper, shouldn't have to take time off. It's just kind of a thin edge. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And he usually runs from close up.
Yeah. Yeah, his other races are very good. Any questions at all?
Wow, that's great.
Good. Thanks. Do we have a good one?
First, who really has said many times that in doing the matchup, I don't know exactly what it is. I can't explain it and put it into words. And in putting it into words, sometimes led you to believe that the matchup was a very linear thing, like where were they here and where were they there and what's the pace going to be today and all that. But I have to agree with Jimmy that his genius with a matchup is all in that program we just saw. So I'm not going to ask Jimmy to do the matchup, because you'll say, well, yeah, there it's one way, and here you're saying one way, but he's really not. He's saying the same thing, except nobody understands it. It's like many geniuses. You can't put into words that which is non-linear. You put them into feelings and sensitivities and insights. But over and above that area, Jimmy is right on the leading edge, and especially has done really the work. There's a lot of work involved in this program. I have just added inspiration and the initial concepts. Jimmy's done the work. And whatever he has to say, I know it'll be very, very valuable to you.